Welcome to Happy Hour with lawyer and TV personality Jonna Spilbor and author and inspirational speaker Carol Pesci. Happy Hour comes your way every Sunday morning at this time with life advice, real conversations, and awesome interviews with self-help heavy hitters, best-selling authors, celebrities, and more. Would you like to maybe live better, stress less, and laugh more? Then you've come to the right place. Good morning and welcome back to Happy Hour here on 92.9 WBPM, a show that happens every Sunday at this time with Jonna Spilbor and Carol Pesci and myself. I'm Frankenberry. And hello, ladies. How are we doing this fine day?
Well, it's good to be back. We took a couple weeks off.
Yes, that we did. We had some technical difficulties, and we had to take last week's show off because of that. But we are back with a brand spanking new one.
Yes, we are.
And Carol, who is our guest today that we can look forward to in our second segment?
All right. So you guys know how much I appreciate clever marketing. One of the many reasons I love Jonna so much is her ability to write the most amazing commercials. Very clever. Very, you know, get
word.
Your attention.
What'd you say?
I said word.
Word.
Okay. Mic drop.
So, you know, we're all on a bunch of, like, PR lists for our show, and they're pitching us stuff all the time. So this comes across my email, the title of this book. I'm like, yeah, she's on. So the title of the book is called How to Drag a Body.
Okay.
Subtle.
I like it.
So, all right, so let me just explain a little bit further for anybody's mouth who just dropped just then. So how to drag a body and other safety tips you hope to never need. Survival tricks for hacking hurricanes and hazards life might throw at you. So she's a really cool chick. She's a journalist, has been in some pretty dangerous situations, and has written a book about being prepared for many types of different things, and just happens to have a very clever title for her book.
Okay, cool. So that's what happens in our second segment today. If you're tuning in to Happy Hour for the first time, we always have a very interesting guest like this one that Carol just mentioned, and that is coming up after we get through our first segment. And when we were talking before we started recording here, now, Jonas, you said something about you were going to nominate yourself for, was it A-hole of the month?
Yes.
And what is the reason for this? And my only question is, when you receive the award, do you also get a plaque and a free parking space?
Yeah, in hell. Wait till I tell you this story.
Oh, no.
Go right ahead.
And I got to say something. It just happened. Okay, so listen, you know, I know we're coming out the other side of this whole COVID thing, but we're not anywhere close to the way we conducted ourselves before this pandemic hit. Meaning, like, for example, and I'm sure you guys can relate, like, I don't go to the grocery store, but I do occasionally have to go to the bank, and the bank has new rules now where you have to actually stand outside, and then somebody will let you in when the coast is clear, and you have to wear a mask, and then it's one person at a time, et cetera, et cetera. You know what I'm talking about.
Exactly.
I was all building the other day.
You what?
I was a jerk at the bank the other day, but go ahead. I don't want to steal your thunder.
Oh,
I only use the drive-thru.
You don't want to steal my jerk thunder. So anyway, so it just so happens that to be honest with you, I'm kind of liking the new bank rules because it's like you have the bank to yourself. It's like you're really important and fancy because you're the only person in the bank and everybody's so nice to you. So I had to pull into the bank. Now, because fewer people are actually making trips to the bank right now, for whatever reason, they're doing their banking some other way, the parking lot is generally pretty empty, except for the people that work there. So I pull into the bank, and I pull into parking spot, and I've got empty spots on all sides of me, right side of me, left side of me, all empty spots, and I'm happy, and I go into the bank, and I do my thing. Well, as I'm leaving the bank, there is the sweetest, I'm just going to say little old lady, and I mean that in the kindest way, you know, who's waiting kind of off to the side because she's going to come into the bank next. And I don't think anything of it, except that as I approach my car, I notice now that there is a minivan parked ridiculously close. To my passenger side. And so as I'm getting into my car, I'm like, grumble, grumble, grumble. Who is the no good SOB idiot parked so close to my car, and then all of a sudden I hear the nice woman who works at the bank manager is greeting that little old lady, and she says, "Welcome, Sister Mary Michael." And I said to myself, "That's a nun van," and I just cursed it out. I am going to burn in hell.
Frankenberry, let's give her the prize. You got a good sound effect for that?
We need the sound of heavenly angels followed by an anvil falling on the ground.
No, you know, you need a sound of like fire, the crackling of fire. Like, you know what it sounds like when you're in the depths of hell.
Yeah, and with the laugh of the devil.
Wait a minute. This is bringing it's bringing a memory back. Isn't there something about, speaking of fire? Don't you have a story about you walking on hot coals?
At the beach.
Yeah, I remember that story.
I can retell it because I'm sure there are plenty of people. I'll give you the quick version. I will never forget it. It was like it was yesterday when I thought it was all hot, you know, as a young 20-something-year-old law student in my bikini on a beautiful beach in San Diego trying to impress this young, strapping assistant U.S. attorney, hot guy, and you know, he's on the beach and I'm on the beach, and I go strutting my bikini self off over to him, like, "Here I come." Like, it's like something out of a commercial. The wind blowing through my hair, slowly steps. I'm doing that model walk, that ankle over ankle over ankle.
Oh, yeah.
All of a sudden, I step in the hot hibachi coals that some idiot buried underneath. And I swear to God, both of my feet are aflame. They're on fire. They're practically smoking. But did I even flinch? Hell no, because that would have made me look so uncool. I just kept walking. My feet peeled. I have like third-degree burns for days. For days. Oh, my God. Good times. Good times.
And can you imagine what you had to explain to the people in the emergency room if you ended up going there as to why it happened?
Oh, man, there was no way. Oh, that
yeah,
was
hell,
a hot,
hell
was really
keeps looking
hot.
At your feet. You keep missing it.
Oh, dear God. Yeah, so that was...
Yeah, dear God, I like that little nun, and you're still mad.
Yeah, you are definitely going to go to hell for cursing out the nun van.
I don't know if I'm going to hell, but we'll give her the a-hole of the day or whatever, a week or
yes.
month.
Well, you know what?
The month.
And you know where you get that parking spot, though, Jonna? You get a plaque that we put on the wall upside down, and the parking spot you get is the last one in the lot. The furthest from the door. That's what you get for cursing the nun van.
And make sure that the furthest spot from the door is like squeezed in between two jalopies who want to open their doors into my car. I deserve that for that horrible thought.
Well, you know what that reminds me of is, and this was a while ago, but I had pulled into Stop and Shop in Poughkeepsie, where I live, and it was the same situation as you, Jonna. Nothing but open parking spots. Nothing. I got like four spots on the left side of me. I got like three spots on the right side of me. I've got all the spots, all like 11 spots total in front of me are all clear. And I'm turning off my car. I'm grabbing my glasses. I'm looking for my wallet. And I look out of the corner of my eye and I see a van coming. And I see a mom driving this minivan, and I see kids in the van, and I see this van slowly making a turn and a curve and a curve. And I looked up, and I sat up, and I went, "No, please, no. Come on, seriously, you're not going to do that, are you? Are you really? She parked right next to my car, and on an angle, I actually had to squeeze out of my car door. And well, I sat there dumbfounded. Of all the spots she could have grabbed, she had to grab the spot next to my car within like a couple of inches of me. I almost had to get out the passenger side door. So, yes, well, I would have cursed out the nun van as well.
Is our devil worshiper still there?
Did we lose Jonna?
The devil got her.
Yeah. Hold on. Okay. We're going to take a pause here, audience. We've got Jonna back. So, Jonna, the question is, because Carol mentioned this just a little bit earlier, we were worried that the devil got you.
You gotta beat that in. Well, I have news for everybody. It's as hot down there as they say it is, but I'm back.
Do you have blisters on your feet again? Or were you wearing nice shoes?
I wasn't down there for very long. I'm just going to get a cold drink of water and we'll be back in business. All right, but I missed your story. I hope it was good.
No, it was only one of these stories where, you know, I'm sitting in a lot like you were, and I'm slow motion. I'm watching this mom and her minivan full of kids decide that the parking spot that she just has to have is within 2 inches of my driver's side door.
Yeah.
All the open spots she could have chosen, she chose that.
Yeah. Feel my pain.
Yeah, yes, exactly. And you know what? I just remembered now, last week when we were going to record the show, but we ran into some technical difficulties. I think that's what the gig was. I had something I wanted to mention here, and I just remembered what it was, and that was the fact that in the space of 7 days, I almost had three people hit me on Route 9, and a week before that, somebody actually did hit me on Route 9, and two of them... Oh, yeah, I actually did get hit on Route 9. It was more of a glancing blow, so we didn't, you know, we took a look, I wiped off a little bit of dust, everybody was good, and it wasn't worth a $500 deductible, and we drove away.
But, oh, wow.
You know, after that, I had like a 7 day period where three different people almost hit me. But, and Jonna, you would appreciate this because you drive it every day. I just want to mention to anybody that lives here in the valley that maybe drives the Poughkeepsie area around the Mid-Hudson Bridge. And those horrible on and off ramps around the Mid-Hudson Bridge to take you onto the arterial or off the arterial or get you up onto the bridge. I want to point out one thing to you. When you are coming on an off ramp that now turns into an on ramp and you are getting onto Route 9 in the fast lane, you're going to pass on your left hand side an upside down red triangle. In that triangle is a word called yield. Now, what I'd like you all to do is possibly get some sort of driver's manual. What the f***?
What is going on?
Did I lose Carol now?
I'm still here, so you must have lost her.
I think the devil's mistaking you for me. Okay, so now it seems like we've got Carol back.
How you doing?
So, I was telling Jonna, Carol, that I think it's just time I stopped trying to tell stories.
Maybe that's it.
That could just be it. But, all right, so I don't even know. Where the hell were we?
You were talking about people on the on-ramp and the off-ramp by Poughkeepsie.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah,
and
yeah.
And yield signs.
So for all of you who are coming on what was an off-ramp that has now turned into an on-ramp and you're getting into the fast lane, I want you to know you're going to pass on your left-hand side a little upside-down triangle. It is a red upside-down triangle. Inside said triangle is a word called yield. Now, I would like if you guys would break out a driver's manual and actually remember what that yield means, especially when it comes to merging, so that instead, when you roll at full speed into the fast lane of Route 9, you aren't suddenly surprised when you see my face in your passenger side window. And you have this look that says, oh my God, how did that happen? It's because you didn't look.
Your face probably looks like that character in that Van Gogh painting, The Scream.
Yeah, exactly. or Macaulay Culkin in Home Alone. That is the worst. I can't tell you how many people pay no attention to yield signs, especially right there.
That is the worst engineered.
It's getting easier and easier to get a license these days. I don't know. You got to have your head on a swivel. I like, on all seriousness, I have Bluetooth in my car, but I rarely will get on a phone call, even hands-free, because I just, you got to be, like, paying attention constantly. You can't, like, be distracted.
Oh, no,
somebody
not at all.
Somebody told me just this week, and I didn't verify it, so take it with a grain of salt, or maybe you heard, that I don't know if it's New York State or some other state wants to raise the driving age from 16 to 18. And I get why. I mean, I don't think it'll ever fly, but I completely get it. I mean, driving is such a huge responsibility. At 16, you know, I think every 16-year-old can't focus enough to drive safely. And I'm not trying to insult teenagers out there. I was one myself. Took 5 tries to pass my driver's test. You know, don't give me one time to pass the bus. But yeah, it's dangerous.
I was asking Craig this question today because we've been going out to Pennsylvania a lot, and I just see such stupid, risky, aggressive. The other day we were going out and just past, you're heading west on 84, just past Newburgh, just past 9W, where the left lane ends, and it's well marked.
Yep.
And I'm in, so it's 3 lanes goes down to 2. I'm in the middle lane. The lane next to me is ending very soon, and there's somebody coming up really, really fast, and I'm like, and I'm starting to back off because then I'm not going to engage. I'd rather just go, and I'd rather be safe than get into a pissing contest with somebody on the road. And it's a young, I don't know, either early 20s or late teens guy, and he ends up riding on the rumble strips on the median next to me because his lane ran out.
Right.
Even though I backed off to let him get around because I'm like, oh, my God, it's just crazy. But and what I asked Craig, and here's what I wonder. Is our tension higher these days because of COVID, because of protests and just everything that's going on, that is there more road rage? Are people, like, once they get in the car, taking their aggressions out even more? Because I see some stupid, stupid things that people do, and I'm thinking, for what?
I would not doubt that at all. I think that theory could have some legs, honestly.
Oh yeah, I've seen examples of that. I mean, there's a spot when I go home where 2 lanes becomes 1, and I had this guy in a white kind of construction van, and he was doing fine. He was backed off on my left hand side. He was keeping pace back there. I was like, good. Well, I'm going to start slowly drifting in because I'm in the lead here. We're good. You know, we're doing the zipper. We're all going in one at a time. And as I start pulling in, all of a sudden, yeah, he almost hits me because he decided at the very last second that, again, just like you said, Carol, wait a minute, I can't let this guy in the tiny, funny-looking car beat me here, can I? So, right. Yes, it suddenly became a pissing contest where he seemed to almost be okay if he hit me.
Well, I'll tell you what, if somebody did hit my car, I would pull him out of the car and I would drag that body.
Bravo! Bravo for that segue.
That has to get an award, honestly.
Yeah.
Because I know what she did. She just pulled that out of her butt, but it worked.
That's right.
It really worked.
You know what, Carol? You get the parking spot closest to the building.
Oh, right. I have to drag my own body. All right, so for those of you wondering why we're so amused by that comment, it's this perpetual game we play every week, is to find some way to segue what we're talking about currently into our guest. And that was my winning attempt to do that. So when we come back from the break, we will have author Judith Matloff with us, and she has written a book called How to Drag a Body. And other safety tips you hope to never need, survival tricks for hacking hurricanes and hazardous life might throw at you. So she's a former journalist, been in some really dangerous situations, and now does some teaching to help people be prepared for any kind of emergency. So when we come back, we will have Judith Matloff with us.
All right, that sounds good. Looking forward to it. This is Happy Hour with Jonna Spilbore and Carol Pesci, and we will return. Our guest and segment number 2 is on the way. This is 92.9 WBPM.
Sunday mornings with 92.9 WBPM means you'll laugh more and stress less. Now here's more Happy Hour with Jonna and Carol.
And welcome back again to Happy Hour here on 92.9 WBPM with Jonas Spilbor and Carol Pesci. And it is time now to get to our guest today, Judith Matloff. And Carol, I know you're looking forward to doing the introductions, especially to repeating the name of her book.
Yeah, so you all know, and I said this in the last segment, how much I appreciate clever marketing, and yes, it's great when you have a message, and important when you have a message. You got to get people's attention so that they'll listen to your message. And when the PR firm pitched this title, I'm like, I love her already. We need to have her on the show. So, and it's a really, really good topic. So on the line with us, we have Judith Matloff. She is the author of Wait For It, How to Drag a Body, and Other Safety Tips You Hope to Never Need, Survival Tricks for Hacking, Hurricanes, and Hazards Life Might Throw at You. So Judith teaches conflict reporting at Columbia's Graduate School of Journalism. She has pioneered safety training seminars for journalists, specifically women, helping hundreds of people feel confident to face an increasingly dangerous world. Hello. Her stories about war and violence have appeared in numerous publications, including the New York Times Magazine, The Economist, Los Angeles Times, and Wall Street Journal. She's a local girl. She's not far from us. She lives in New York City with her family. So, Judith, welcome to our show, and thank you for taking the time to talk with us.
Oh, it's my pleasure.
And Judith, you know, I have to tell you before we get started here that the title of your book provided Carol with possibly the best segue that we have ever had to lead into, because usually what happens in segment number one after we get done telling stories, often about Jonna's mishaps, Carol or Jonna will come up with some sort of really bad, awful segue.
Yes.
To make a connection between whatever we're talking about and the topic of our guest. So this time around, we were talking about traffic, and I had brought up how idiots had almost hit my car like three times in 1 week on Route 9, which is a road around here. And Carol said, well, you know, if anybody hits my car, I'm going over to theirs and I'm dragging out the body.
Well, I'm so happy to help.
So where I'd like to begin, which is what we do with most of our authors, is give us the backstory, Judith. Tell us, you've been in some really scary, challenging situations. So give us the backstory of what brought you to the point of doing the teaching that you do and wanting to write this book.
Right. Okay, that's an excellent question. I was a foreign correspondent for quite a few decades, and when I started out being a journalist back in the Jurassic times, we didn't do safety training. We didn't have safety protocols. Your boss would, like, call you up at 3 a.m. and say, hey, there's a coup going on in Burundi, get on the first plane. And then he would, if you were lucky, and it was always a he, by the way, and then if you were lucky, he'd say, good luck. You know, and, you know, buy yourself a drink when you get there. And I bought myself a lot of drinks when I got there because I didn't know what the heck I was doing. So one of the more memorable times, which convinced me that one needed to prepare for dangerous situations because I wasn't, was they sent me to a southern African country called Angola. And the assignment was to cover some elections, but then everything went wrong with the elections and war started again. And one could have anticipated that this would happen, but we didn't. So there I am. Mm-hmm. I'm stuck in a country. There's fighting going on. The airport is closed because they're fighting at the airport, so I can't get out. And then the number two of the rebel group, which went back to war, didn't like my reporting, so they threatened to kill me if I didn't get out of the country. So that was a little bit unpleasant. And then there really was nobody to evacuate me because the United States, my country, did not have diplomatic relations with Angola. So, you know, the other thing was like a car bomb went off in front of my hotel, and every time I went out to do reporting, I'd hit a roadblock or somebody would shoot in my direction or whatever, and I really didn't know what to do. So I walked into a lot of really, really, really stupid situations. Like at one point, I was walking on an ammunition dump. That's where they store missiles and shells, and somebody had tried to blow it up, probably the rebels. And the photographer and I thought it'd be really cool to take pictures. So we were like walking around on smoking shells. And while we were doing this, I was thinking, A, it's a miracle that I'm alive. And B, I, next time around, I really need to know what I'm doing. So, you know, this became a conviction of mine as my career progressed. This was back in the early 90s, like as I said, you know, a million trillion years ago. So then when I returned to the United States 20 years ago, exactly 20 years ago, and began teaching at Columbia's Graduate School of Journalism, my course was about covering crises and conflicts. And so I began to incorporate safety protocols and safety training into my teaching because I really didn't want all these younger people to make these stupid mistakes that I did. And then what happened was, you know, word gets out, you know, so then I started teaching all these workshops and trainings all over the world, the Middle East, Africa, former Soviet Union, you know, all these places. And then what happened was like ordinary people, like my sister, the social worker, or my neighbor, the plumber, you know, they would have these questions like, hey, I just got hacked. How can I, you know, protect my cyber communications and my financial transactions online? Or, hey, I'm going to go to Puerto Rico this summer, but I heard there might be a Category 5 hurricane. What should I do to prepare? Or, hey, I'm going to some protests, but, you know, I heard it could get violent, so what do I do to protect myself against tear gas and people bopping on me on the head? So I started getting all these queries, and then I thought, like, why don't I just put it all in a book? So that's how it happened.
It's a miracle that you're okay. So, and you just touched on some very relevant points right now. So the average person listening right now is not an international correspondent who's going to be in war-torn countries. However, we're in times of conflict. And even when we're not in times of conflict, it's just traveling or just our living our day-to-day, there are ways that we can be more alert and more prepared. And one of the lines from your book that I love, you say you can't control terrifying events, but you can be ready for them. So what I would love for you to do, if you could, Judith, you say if you look at the big picture of any given situation, so there's a commonality of when the questions are coming at you, and there's four questions that you suggest people ask. Do you have them memorized, or do you want me to list them?
Yeah. Okay. Well, first of all, as counterintuitive as it may sound, it's very, very calming to look at the worst-case scenario and then think about how you would plan to either mitigate it or prevent it. Because what that does is it forces you to contemplate what might happen. And most of us, by nature, live in denial. We don't want to think about bad things happening. But bad things always can happen. Look at COVID. And so if you're prepared for these things and you have a roadmap for how to deal with it, you're going to just feel more in control of your life. And there are certain potential dangers that all of us face. One could be an active shooter, these very, very extreme weather events that we've seen in the last couple of weeks and that we will continue to see. And now, as you pointed out, with conflict, with protests, there's, you know, you could be walking down the street and suddenly a protest erupts, or you could be going out to peacefully protest and then things go haywire. So these are the sort of things that one might face, as well as the dangers that come with online communications. So if you simply sit down and analyze what are the things that are making you anxious, first of all, what are the things that could happen to you? How likely is it that the worst case would happen? Because a lot of times it's not that likely. And then how would I plan for it? And from there, you can then develop your communication plan, which is absolutely critical, which is who would I call in case something happens? And also, who would I contact or access beforehand to be better informed about the risk of this thing happening and how I should deal with it? And then another thing that one should think about is, do you need any special equipment? If you're going to a demonstration, do you need something to protect yourself against pepper spray and tear gas? So if you live in a place that's prone to natural disasters, for instance, part of your gear would be a medical kit, a go-to bag. In other words, an emergency bag packed in case you need to evacuate at short notice. So that would be an example of the type of things that, you know, one would consider. So these are the kind of questions that one should consider. So again, just to repeat, have a plan of what you would do to prepare, have the gear that you need, and most importantly, also think about where you would get your information, who you need to communicate with during a crisis, and also how you would get out of the situation.
And do most of the plans involve Kevlar underwear?
No. Too heavy and too hard to clean.
Judith, what's the most common questions that you get from people as to how what they're concerned about and what your advice is? Like the average person listening right now.
Yeah. My book is very much aimed towards women. It's also for men, but it answers a lot of the questions that I get from women. Women are very, very concerned about vulnerability when traveling, which really nobody's traveling at the moment, but that's a very, very common one that I get. And they're also worried about sexual harassment, cyber harassment, and sexual assault. So that's a very big one. Certainly natural disasters is something I get a lot of questions about as to how, you know, what one should pack, what kind of an emergency kit you need in the house. And now with COVID, I'm hearing a lot of questions about psychological resilience. This is a really tough time. And in many ways, I find it very similar to working in a war zone because it's open-ended. The anxiety is constant. And you really need some emotional stamina to get through it. So lately, that's been basically since March, that's been one I've been hearing a lot from people.
Judith, that could be a book in and of itself. That could be the sequel to this book, just to have the emotional resilience during a crisis that is as unheard of as the one that we're in now.
Right. Well, actually, I have an entire chapter to it, devoted to it, but you're absolutely right. I mean, I could write an entire book on it.
Yeah, and you know what? The important thing you said there, what makes it so much more difficult than other things we may have dealt with in the past, is simply that it's open-ended.
Yeah, because the thing about, let's say, a hurricane or a wildfire, it hits, and then it's over, and then there's the recovery stage.
Right.
We're nowhere near the recovery stage. And I, you know, that makes it really, really difficult for all of us. And, you know, what I've been advising a lot of people to do is just try to get through the day and the week. Don't project too much into the future because we don't know what the future will look like. And the present is tough enough. So if you start getting anxious about the what ifs, and the would-be's and the could-be's, it just adds to your daily anxiety. So, and my other big piece of advice is to try to build something nice into the day every day and keep as much social contact and support as you can muster with people, because psychologists who deal with emergencies and crises say the one factor which determines emotional resilience is social connection.
And wine. I agree with that.
Or in my case, cheap beer. I'm with you. With you.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I like tequila myself, but, you know, we're all. You know.
So, and you have to forgive me, Judith, because I haven't yet read the book, but I am very much interested in doing that. Do you help teach, like, what about the odd things in life? For example, I mean, this is really odd, but you've lived through a ton of things that many of us never will. Do you teach us, you know, which bugs to eat if our house falls down upon us and nobody can get to us for days? Like, is that the sort of thing that you cover?
I don't like bugs myself, although I have eaten mosquito larvae and crickets. I really don't like worms. I'm sorry, that's just like, I will not eat a worm. But I do have a whole section on what you should do to prepare in terms of food that can be preserved for long periods of time. And as a matter of fact, we just always have a month's supply of long life food in the house, things like dried lentils and cans and, you know, beans and all that kind of thing. So when COVID hit, Actually, everybody in my family was outside of New York, which is where, you know, which was the global epicenter for a while. My son was in California in college. My husband was on a business trip in Europe, and I was upstate, not far from you guys, actually, on a writer's residency. And so by the time we all got back to New York, everybody had pretty much bought, like, the last can of beans and the last sack of lentils and rice and macaroni in the store.
Right.
But we didn't need to worry because we already had all those supplies in the house. So I just recommend just always have stuff lying around the house, you know, cans of tuna and stuff like that. But don't go to Bugs. I don't know. They don't taste that good, you know.
Don't go to Bugs.
No, like as an absolute lefty, like Bear Grylls, he's a hot guy, but he can find some stuff to eat that I would never stomach in the wild. But isn't it true, like, can't we live without food a lot longer than we can live without water, or am I Googling too much?
Yes, you're right. But it also depends on how much weight you have on you. I weigh less than a bag of cement, and I have a really fast metabolism. And I probably need to eat more than a 300-pound man, because he's got reserves to work off of. I don't really have any reserves in my body.
Wow.
So, you know, in terms of the starvation scale, I would be one of the first to succumb.
I did know one of the things that fascinates me about you is you're a demure, tiny woman. And
yeah.
The title of your book is How to Drag a Body. And I am very interested in knowing, and I'm probably around your size. I'm very interested in knowing how to drag a body. And when you say how to drag a body, are you referring to a dead body or a live body that can't move?
No. If it's dead, if a person has already deceased, you don't really need to drag them. Just wait for the emergency responders to get there or the morgue. But no. I mean dragging somebody to safety. And it's something that, covering conflicts and riots and civil unrest, it's something that we all needed to learn how to do, which, by the way, you know, when I started in the Jurassic Age, none of us knew how to do. But basically, even tiny people like us can drag people who weigh 2-3 times what we weigh. What you do is you secure the person under the armpit, and you rest their neck and their chin and their upper shoulders against you. And you'd be surprised how easy it is then to drag them. And the other thing would be, if that really isn't good for you or your knees are, like, really giving out, just put the person down, like you could drag them by their T-shirt, or maybe, you know, put a towel under them or a tarp and then pull them on that. You could also try ropes. But the important thing is to keep the person stable, because you don't want to cause more harm. Mm-hmm. And if the person is vomiting, you want to turn them on their side so that they don't choke.
And you know what, Judith, I have to say, my apologies, but I've seen way too many movies in my life. So my first inkling from the title of your book was, you know, on a rug and then eventually wrap them in a rug and throw them in a river.
we were thinking that the title should have been How to Hide a Body.
I don't do that in my trainings.
No, but I like it. Yeah. You never know you're going to have to drag somebody away from an accident scene. Or recently we had this weather in New York, and I had a tree come down in my yard. Fortunately, it didn't hit the house. But I was always thinking about, well, what if it does hit my house? Where's the safest part of my house? Like, those are real things that happen to us every day.
Yeah, definitely.
I also worry about, so I live alone, and I try not to worry about it too much because you get what you focus on, but I always think, could I save myself if I choked on something? Like, can you save yourself as a single person, no one else is around, if you have food or something lodged in your throat?
That one would be a little bit tough. That one would be tough. And, you know, I don't think you could administer a Heimlich maneuver on yourself. So my advice to you, your worst case scenario is you're going to choke in your lung. So you've done your risk assessment. How likely is it? Okay, you can decide whether it's likely or not. If you think it is likely or, you know, probable, then just chew your food really carefully, and that will be your safety plan.
And prevent it, yes. Does that ever happen to you, Frankenberry? Because you live alone, too. Have you ever swallowed anything, like, down the wrong pipe and thought, oh, my God, I could have just died, and no one would know until the cats had me happy?
Yeah. Well, you know, it's funny that you say that because, Judith, I have done sometimes exactly what you just said. Suddenly, mm-hmm. that thought will pop into my head, especially if I'm eating chicken and you have one of those little tiny little bones that end up, for some reason, you know, you realize it's on your tongue and you go, man, that's the kind of thing that gets stuck.
Yeah.
And that's when you realize, holy cow, I got to follow the old school lessons and chew like 300 times before I swallow. You know, but yes, I have thought about that in the past and I have realized that, no, none of my cats know how to do the Heimlich maneuver because I haven't taught them. So I'm screwed.
Well,
yeah.
Send the cats to my training program and I'll teach them. No, but seriously, but, you know, this is really interesting that you mentioned these, you know, tiny little funky bones that get stuck, because that actually happened once to me. But because of, again, I can't stress how important but because I already had a communication plan, I already had a plan of who to contact in case such an emergency like that happened, I stumbled out of my house, had my hand to my throat, and I rang my neighbor's doorbell, and we had a prearranged agreement. He worked at home. He was a super of a building. So we had this prearranged agreement that if there was any problem, Raphael would help me. And that's exactly what happened. He got me, you know, to a hospital. And then it turned out that the bone had already been digested, so it wasn't really that bad. But the other thing is, like, my mother, when she was still alive, was very frail and kept falling. So she had one of those panic buttons. It's Life Alert.
Yeah.
And,
yeah.
You know, I've been thinking lately that you don't have to be 91 years old to have that kind of thing. Maybe if you are living alone and you are worried about this type of thing, maybe it's worthwhile. I think it costs like $20 a month or something. You know, get a Life Alert button, and then you can hit it in case there is an emergency and you need somebody to help you.
I think, you know, one of the biggest messages here is that to really be prepared and have a plan, which does, it's comforting just hearing you say that. And I have to ask you this, because one of the things I do, and I always thought it was a bad habit and that I'm a weirdo, but whenever I go anywhere, movies, a mall, wherever, I always look for the exit. Like, I'm always planning, how the do I get the hell out of here if I have to get out of here in a hurry? But you just reminded me of something else. Should you have a code, especially if you're a woman? Like, let's say you're getting kidnapped and you manage to dial your mother or somebody on your speed dial on your phone. Like, should you have some sort of thing where you say, green men are falling from the sky and they know that they need to call the police and send them to your house? Or am I watching too much TV?
Well, you know, we would do that covering conflicts. And actually, I was detained in Dagestan and I had a code that, you know, with my husband in case this eventuality happened. It was something like, what's a soccer score? You know, but the thing is, if you're being kidnapped, you probably don't have access to your phone. So I can't imagine somebody's kidnapping you and you say, could you hold on in a second? I want to call mom. So, you know, I mean,
drop a code phrase.
Yeah. I mean, I think if you're working in a war zone, it's probably very, very useful, and I know it's useful. But I think for the average citizen, what's much more useful is to try to avoid getting in a situation where this might happen. And definitely for women, we're more likely to be assaulted if we're in a remote area with just one person alone. So, again, you know, instead, I would try to prevent getting into that situation, if at all possible.
Oh, absolutely. And I have some stories I could share, but I know we have to wrap up with you. We've been speaking with Judith Matlock. She's the author of How to Drag a Body and Other Safety Tips You Hope to Never Need. And I know that this, both men and women can enjoy this book, but especially women. We have loved speaking with you. I would love for you to speak to a group of women, because this stuff, we all have these strange questions, and you are really one of us, and we would love to talk to you more, hopefully on another show. Judith, if anybody wants to connect with you, buy the book, learn more about you, work with you, how can they find you?
My website is the best way. It's Judith Matlock, J-U-D-I-T-H, M as in Mary, A, T as in Thomas, L-O-F-F as in French fries, .com. awesome. And they can also get the book through your website. It really has been a pleasure. We could go on and on. You have some fascinating tips for us. Again, the book is How to Drag a Body and Other Safety Tips You Hope to Never Need by Judith Matlock. We can't wait to talk to you again. Thanks for being a part of our show.
Thank you. It was my pleasure, and stay safe.
Yes, indeed. Stay safe. And thank you as well, Judith. I really enjoyed that. And we will be right back because we're not done yet with Happy Hour. And as I've said in the past, yes, we will be right back is a warning. Segment number three is on the way. So stick with us here on 92.9 WBPM. You've got Happy Hour with Jonas Spilbore and Carol Pesci, and we will return.
Live better, laugh harder, love more. This is Happy Hour with Jonna and Carol on 92.9 WBPM.
And we're back one more time this morning with Happy Hour and Jonas Spilbore and Carol Pesci. Hello, ladies.
Hello.
Frankenberry.
Never, ever will we get this right on the telephone.
Nope. Never
going to
happen.
So thanks so much to Judith Matlock for joining us. Nice, nice choice on the guest there, Miss Pesky.
Well, you know, life is going to send us some curveballs. And while we can't live in fear constantly or prepare for every little thing, she was very helpful with some basic things of being alert and being prepared without being, you know, becoming an obsessive prepper. And she's had some, had some pretty scary situations where she got lucky and came back and learned from it, and now is teaching other people and the rest of us how to stay safe. And she happens to be a clever marketer.
Okay. Yeah. And she certainly has done the job of you know, getting herself safely out of some of those situations.
Wow. Yeah. No, thank you. But good for her.
But I wonder, though, if she could keep herself from going to hell by cursing a nun van.
We'll have to ask her next time we have her back.
Yeah, I don't think that's going to become a chapter in the next book. I'm just saying. I'm not 100%.
The name of that chapter would be The Nun Van and Directions South.
No, that's cute.
Oh, wow. Yeah, that is a good title. I like it. Oh, so speaking of titles, I got to give a shout out before I forget. To April Matula. She is a local children's book author. She's a fan of our show, and she has just published her first children's book. She's actually done four and another one coming probably next week. And even more proud that Little Pink Press, my publishing company, is her publisher. So she listened to our show. She heard that I did publishing. She reached out to me that she's written and illustrated these children's books and has always wanted to get them out there, and so proud and happy to be able to have her do that. So if you want to go on Amazon, look for April Matula, M-A-T-U-L-A, and her books are Oh Lola, Tushy Tanner, It's Going to Be a Good Day, Lucky Larry, and the one that's coming out next week is called It Happened Again. And she's just a delight. She's a lovely person. She does special education for preschoolers. Just beautiful person, and congratulations to her. And if you want to support her, probably best ways to go to Amazon and again, search her name, April Matula.
Oh, that's great. And, you know, and your press does, it does a lot of this. I mean, like, you know, just the fact that it's called the Little Pink Press, and it helps all these smaller authors get their stuff out there, and you do a great job of promoting them, and you pick good ones. I mean, you've got quality.
Oh, I love it. I love being part of that process for another author, and I do exclusively books that are either written by women or for women, hence my Little Pink, you know, my name, Little Pink Press. And we've had a couple of authors on our show, too. The last one was Lori Manny Lentini. She wrote Anxiety Insights, really, really good book on mental illness and anxiety and the stigma associated with it. She and both of her children deal with it. Our sister even became a psychologist in spite of anxiety. And then ES Thinking is another book that by Susan Krebs. And a memoir I've done. It's just it's awesome. My wall of fame in my office is growing, and I couldn't be more proud.
And I want to give a shout out to you because I love how, maybe some of our listeners might remember this, but over the years, we've been doing this now for a number of years, one of the themes that have run through a lot of the guests that we've had on is when you're trying to make it or become an entrepreneur or live your dream, you've got to decide what your why is, and you've got to decide what your mission is going to be. And then when everything lines up with that why and that mission, things can almost come almost effortlessly. I mean, of course it takes effort, but you know what I mean? It can come more easily. And I think you have really dialed it in with this venture, and I'm really proud of you. I'm very, very proud of you.
Thank you. 100%. It's something, and I speak to many women who are in the idea stage of their book, and I don't charge for that call if anybody wants to look me up or search Little Pink Press. My first step is always to encourage them to just do it, to write that book. Nobody else can write that story for you. So my first step is always to really just encourage people to write that book. You don't need to have a major in English. You just need to express your voice in your own style. Frank, both of you are very, very good at that. And write that book. And I never push hard to sell anybody. I say, go write it, get it done, get it almost done, and then call me back. And then I explain to them their various options, including or not including me, to get published, because I feel most passionately about encouraging people to write that book they've always wanted to do that, to be part of, to have that happen. And then should I be the right person for them to work with? Well, great. But that, my primary job is to encourage them to get it done and get their book out there. And it's just so incredibly rewarding to be part of that process for somebody else.
Oh, I'm sure that's very satisfying.
One of these days, I will be part of that process for Miss Billboard. She's got great ideas. She's a great writer. And
absolutely.
And very you, too.
Yeah, well.
Absolutely.
I still have an idea for that one book that we talked about a long time ago, the children's book for adults.
I love it.
I like the sound of that.
Well, I know. It was the one about shoes. The Dr. Seussian thing.
Yep.
So I just need to find some illustrations for it. That's all. But
all right.
Yeah. Well, I think today was a very good show. It was nice to be back with a brand new one. And again, thank you so much to Judith Matlaw for joining us today. Fantastic guest. And we've got another show coming your way next week. This is what we do every Sunday morning here on 92.9 WBPM with Jonna Spilbor and Carol Pesci. Ladies, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Frank.
For everybody that tuned in this week, thanks for joining us. We'll talk to you next Sunday.
You've been listening to Happy Hour with Jonna Spilbor and Carol Pesci. If you missed last weekend's show or want to hear it again, visit the Happy Hour page at 92.9WBPM.com. There's more life advice, real conversation, and another awesome interview next Sunday morning at 8 a.m. Live better, stress less, and laugh more with Happy Hour on 92.9 WBPM.